WMRA News. I'm Bob Levicky. UVA says it plans to reopen grounds to students and faculty on schedule in August, but there are still lots of details to work out. Numbers measuring the impact of COVID-19 show a disproportionate hit in Latino communities, including those in the Harrisonburg area. And we meet a group of musicians and artists from across Virginia producing original work to protest pipeline construction, live stream concerts twice a month. This is the WMRA Daily for Friday, May 29th. Virginia's new rules on masks required for most indoor activities go into effect today. From our partner station VPM, Ben Pavier reports.
You'll need a mask for trips to indoor businesses ranging from grocery stores to tattoo parlors. They're also required at bus stations, government buildings, and indoor restaurants once they're allowed to serve people inside. Governor Ralph Northam says masks are a simple and effective public health tool.
And it's just the right thing to do to protect the people around you as well as workers.
It's up to the health department to enforce the rules, but Northam says they'll only intervene in especially egregious cases. He declined to say what exactly it would take for them to step in. The rules only cover customers. Employers are already required to provide masks for most customer-facing workers, like restaurant servers, under Northam's Phase 1 guidelines.
It's Ben Pavier with VPM reporting. Looser restrictions on businesses and social gatherings during the pandemic are still at least a week away in Virginia, Governor Northam said on Thursday. Even though the trend of new cases continues to climb, Northam said current coronavirus-related trends are encouraging, but more data are needed before the state can start its second phase of reopening. He said the earliest the state would move into phase two would be June the 5th. It would allow social gatherings of up to 50 people. The governor says he would prefer that all of the state takes that step at once, including Richmond and Northern Virginia, which are entering phase one today.
And again, I'll speak with the leaders in those areas and obviously look at the numbers. But if they're comfortable, I would really like to see everybody in Virginia moving together at the same time.
The administration has not yet released detailed guidelines for how phase two would work. Northam says they don't have a clear picture yet of whether it's safe to loosen more rules. Virginia lags in implementing extended unemployment benefits passed by Congress, according to an investigation by the Associated Press. The AP found that the Virginia Employment Commission has not gotten the program off the ground yet and does not expect to until July. Tens of thousands of Virginians are eligible for the Pandemic Emergency Unemployment Compensation Program, or PEUC, according to the VEC. The PEUC provides up to 13 extra weeks of benefits for those whose unemployment compensation has run out. As of early this week, Virginia was one of 19 states that have yet to start making payments under the PEUC program, according to the U.S. Labor Department, even though the law was passed more than 2 months ago. Virginia's unemployment rate has now reached 10.6%. Nearly 59,000 Virginians filed initial unemployment claims last week, according to federal data. That's an increase in weekly jobless claims after weeks of falling numbers of new claims. Well, the University of Virginia says it plans to reopen grounds for at least some students on August 25th for the fall semester. UVA leaders outlined rough plans on Thursday for the fall, but said many details such as COVID-19 precautions and class sizes have yet to be figured out. Larger classes will remain online in the fall, and in-person instruction will conclude by Thanksgiving. UVA said it is still working on plans for other measures, including how to test students and trace contacts in the case of an infection, how many students to allow on grounds, and how to provide personal protective equipment such as masks to students, staff, and faculty. James Madison University has also announced its intention to reopen its campus to students in August. Virginia Public Radio's Michael Pope now has more on how higher education in Virginia may conduct classes during the fall semester.
Even before the pandemic, virtual learning was becoming an increasing part of colleges and universities, on campus and off. Spencer Shanholtz at the Weldon Cooper Center for Public Service at UVA looked at students enrolled in at least one online course, and he found private colleges and universities are leading the way, especially one particular institution in Lynchburg.
Almost 90% of students enrolled at Liberty take at least one online course, and a great portion of those take all of their courses online, and a lot of those are also from out of state.
Other schools with significant online enrollment are George Mason University, Old Dominion University, and Northern Virginia Community College. Joe DeFilippo at the State Council for Higher Education says it's a trend that's about to explode.
We're in the middle of a great experiment, and institutions and individuals, both faculty and students, are going to be discovering all kinds of things that they can do and that they can't do. And when we come out on the other side of that experiment, the landscape is going to be changed.
But will that landscape be different 5 years from now or 10 years from now? DeFilippo says he does not expect the old landscape to go away entirely, although he does think post-pandemic higher ed will incorporate more computers and more distance learning. I'm Michael Pope.
Since the Virginia Department of Health began reporting the ethnic breakdown of coronavirus cases, data have shown a consistently disproportionate hit in Latino communities, including those in Harrisonburg. As Virginia Public Radio's Kat Modlin Jackson found, there's more to the impact than what the numbers show.
Hi, welcome to DQ. May I take your order, please?
At a Dairy Queen drive-thru in Harrisonburg, Liz Zavala has been serving customers from behind a mask throughout the pandemic. Like most of her family members, she's risked her safety working on the front lines. In spite of their precautions, 7 of Zavala's relatives have contracted COVID-19, including her grandmother Cecilia, who died in May.
It's just hard to accept the fact that it happened this way when we know that we did everything we could to make it not happen.
Zavala traces her roots from Mexico to the Shenandoah Valley, where many of her loved ones have jobs in the nearby poultry plants.
There's no social distancing for them. It's shoulder-to-shoulder work.
Workplace conditions are something that Harrisonburg Vice Mayor Sal Romero hears about a lot. Many who reach out to him are undocumented residents, afraid to speak out publicly.
You know, they share that information with me because I was once undocumented. People know that. I sort of have that understanding of what it is like to be in those shadows and to feel that if you raise your voice, it's only going to affect you negatively.
Romero's leveraging his community ties to spread the word about safety and resources. In addition to everyday conversations, he makes his own PSAs for Facebook, talks with faith leaders, and spends a lot of time going back and forth between workers, plant managers, and policymakers. Leaders of Governor Northam's Health Equity Task Force say they're trying to support marginalized communities by sharing information in multiple languages, distributing PPE, and ramping up testing in underserved areas. But some say they're not reaching far enough. Free tests were available near Denise Espinal's home in Alexandria. She just wasn't sure how to prove that her family qualified after they got sick. It took days and the help of an advocacy group before they could get into the clinic. Espinal, her husband, and their son tested positive for COVID-19. Through an interpreter, Espinal explains that neither she nor her husband have health insurance. He lost his job, and they won't be receiving unemployment or a stimulus check. Bills are stacking up, says Espinal, and she's not sure how they're going to get by. Freddie Mejia is a health policy analyst at the nonpartisan Commonwealth Institute for Fiscal Analysis. He says the rates of infection might be understated for communities of color because for about 60% of Latinx Virginians,
when they have the chance to circle a race before being asked if they're Latino or Hispanic, they'll go ahead and circle white.
Mejia says the state can present a clearer picture by reporting rates through disaggregated Hispanic and non-Hispanic racial demographics. Even in imperfect form, Mejia says the data reveal the result of long-standing inequities.
This obviously is a very tragic circumstance, but I think that this is also a catalyst for real change.
And while there's no one fix to enduring problems, Mejia says policymakers can start by extending emergency COVID-19 Medicaid services to undocumented residents and investing in long-term safety nets. As the state moves forward with the process of reopening, Liz Zavala and her family are still waiting to give their matriarch a proper send-off.
She didn't want to be cremated, and we had to cremate her so we can take her remains to Mexico next year when everything's okay.
She'll remember her grandmother Cecilia as an enduring source of strength and love. I'm Kat Modlin Jackson.
For 33 years, Diane Woolard headed the Virginia Department of Health team that watched for emerging diseases. Ward was retired for a year, but now she's back lending a hand during the COVID-19 pandemic from Virginia Public Radio. Pamela D'Angelo reports.
As an epidemiologist who headed VDH's Surveillance and Investigation Division, Diane Woolard was no stranger to pretty nasty diseases.
I was involved in the responses to anthrax in 2001, the pandemic flu in 2009, Ebola and Zika.
But the coronavirus disease is different.
The problem with COVID-19 is that it started in the middle of flu season, and nobody knew that we had a new virus. It came, hard and fast.
She said state epidemiologists had been preparing since January after they had heard about it taking hold in other parts of the world. When it hit, it strained the system.
When something of this magnitude occurs, it's hard to have sufficient resources.
And the effects of COVID-19 on communities also are different.
None of the others had such an impact on businesses and people's ability to pay their bills and feed their families.
And there's more to come.
Now we're about to face some huge challenges with adding on more testing for all nursing home staff and residents, all the case interviews and identifying all their close contacts.
Even more resources will be needed with potential treatments and a vaccine. I'm Pamela D'Angelo.
Finally today, the Sun Sing Collective is a group of musicians and artists from across Virginia producing original work to protest the Mountain Valley and Atlantic Coast pipelines. They, along with their parent organization, Artivism Virginia, are now broadcasting live stream concerts twice a month. WMRA's Randy B. Hagee reports.
The Sun Sing Collective's first big project back in 2018 was to outfit the Sun Bus, a van with a lift and four-wheel drive, big mud tires, and solar panels on top that power a 5,000-watt concert-level sound system. Since then, they've held concerts with and without the bus to raise money and awareness for various environmental justice activists, and the quarantine hasn't stopped them. Joshua Vanna is Artivism Virginia's co-director, based in Albemarle County.
With these concerts, we were looking for a way to support that work, namely to defeat the Mountain and Atlantic Coast pipelines by helping amplify calls to action and to lift up our communities with hopeful music and spoken word.
The collective released their fourth hour-long concert last week and plan to produce at least two more, scheduled for June 4th and 18th at 7 p.m. They broadcast live via Facebook, YouTube, and Vimeo. On alternating Thursdays, they're also running the Street Sing workshop series over Zoom. In one recent workshop, an artist and activist taught viewers how to make flags.
The goal is to gather folks, new and old, from the work in our region or outside of it, to hone new and existing skills, bringing art to our activism in the street for the next times that we can convene.
To watch previous concerts or to register for a free workshop, visit Artivism Virginia on Facebook.
Keep your eyes on the prize. Hold on.
For WMRA News, I'm Randy B. Hagee.
Keep your eyes on the prize. Hold on.
And you can learn more about the Sun Sing Collective at WMRA.org and on our app for WMRA News. I'm Bob Levicky. Thanks for listening. Stay safely connected and enjoy your Friday.